What's up, guys? My name is Kevin, and I am an alcoholic. I've also shot tons of heroin and tons of meth. Thank you, Stephen, for introducing me. It's an honor to be here tonight to be able to share my story. Happy Father's Day to the dads, moms. I really commend y'all for being here, trying to change your life. It took a lot to get here, I know. You're not here on a winning streak. It was not good out there, and it wasn't good out there for me either. I grew up in a small town, Johnson City, a little west of here. And I really had that white picket fence childhood. My grandfather was the pastor of the church, and he was also the sheriff of the county I grew up in. Most of my family's law enforcement. I spent childhoods hunting, fishing, with all the neighboring counties, sighting in weapons. That's what my childhood looked like. I knew about drugs, and I knew that they got you locked up. That's about all I knew. My grandfather was a narcotics investigator in Bexar County. Childhood was good. Childhood was real, real good. You know, a lot of real, real good memories. Parents got a divorce when I was 9, maybe 10 years old. But it wasn't that bad. I remember Dad would pick us up on the weekends, and we'd go, and the first night he picked us up, we'd go sit in a room where everybody would circle up. It was weird. I didn't know what was going on. But after that, of course, Dad made a good attempt at making sure we had fun that entire weekend. So I really had a good co-parenting relationship with my parents. I remember as a child working out in the shop with my dad, and he'd flick his cigarette butt, and I remember all my attention was on that cigarette butt. When he'd go back in the house, bam, I'd beeline it for that cigarette butt. Same thing if he'd leave a beer out. I think it was because Dad was doing it. I thought it was cool. I don't know. But I do remember those days very, very clearly. I'm an addict, and I kind of always have been, even before my drug use and drinking started. Everything I do, I got to do completely. When I turned 18, I got a tattoo, bought a pack of cigarettes, went to a strip club, and then I got married. That's what I did. I did everything legally that I could do when I was 18. I did it really quickly. I'm an addict. I love working. I'm very, very driven. I got married, started working with Bridgestone Firestone, and worked my way up the ladder really, really quickly, to the point to where I was sleeping at work most of the times. That's where I wanted to be. I felt a lot of love there. I felt a lot of camaraderie. Growing up, I had 5 sisters.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. As soon as I could, I wanted to get the hell out of the house. So I turned 15, I got a car, and I got the hell out of the house. So I found something at work that I hadn't had, and that was like brotherhood, camaraderie, yada, yada, yada. Life was good. My home life was suffering because I wasn't ever at home. I was always at work. And when your home life suffers, everything else tends to start suffering. The wife ended up cheating on me because I was never around. I wasn't around. I wasn't giving her what she needed. I moved into Austin, and I started my drinking career. All the guys at the shop were drinking and partying. My manager at the time, his father was the district manager, so we really felt untouchable. We had all these stores we could go into with all these cars we could go into and an excessive amount of money, so we'd take cars out on the weekend, and we would go party with customers' cars. But drinking wasn't that big. It wasn't ruining anything for me then. I'd go get shit-faced on the weekend, and then Monday I'd be right back at work, usually because I woke up in my office. I met a young lady when I moved into Austin and settled down with her and started having kids with her. Drinking occasionally, not much. Not a whole lot of drinking. Some cocaine here and there. I didn't like drugs. I really didn't. They had a bad stigma attached to them. I really didn't want nothing to do with them. In fact, I looked down on people that did them. I did. It's the way it was. Career was going pretty good. I'm a commercial manager for Advance Auto Parts at this time. I remember going into work one day and my stomach hurting pretty severely. I kind of put it off. Didn't think anything of it, really. I kept working for a few days until one morning when I woke up, I couldn't get out of bed. The wife drove me to the hospital. I was in excruciating pain. Was pale white, sweating, had a fever. We got into the emergency room. Before they even knew my last name, they shot me up with morphine. Now, when they got me in the back, I could tell something was severely wrong because everybody was panicked, except me. I just had morphine. I'm good. I am good. There is no more hurt. Everything's warm. I'm joking with doctors. They're asking me, have you taken anything? I said, you know, my stomach's been hurting. I've been eating suppositories, but those aren't working. You know, I'm joking with them. Suppositories go up your ass, just so you know. They're not oral. That was the joke. I felt really, really good. It was a feeling that even sitting here right now on the back of my neck, my hair is standing up because it was awesome. Everything stopped hurting. The doctor told me immediately if I wanted to say anything to my girlfriend or fiance at the time that I better do it, that I was about to go under and they had to perform an emergency appendectomy. I hit a factory data reset on my phone, and then I told my girl I loved her. just in case. It's the truth. I woke up 2 days later. It was supposed to be a pretty quick little procedure. It took about 7 hours. I woke up hooked to a machine, and my mom was there. That was it. My mom was there. They said I'd almost died, and they'd pumped a gallon and a half of poison out of me. And I was hooked up to a machine with this button taped to my hand, and that button was for the morphine. Started my opiate addiction. I was supposed to be in the hospital for about a week. I was in the hospital for 20-some-odd days. Took me a while to be able to walk, to be able to see straight. It was a pretty bad ordeal. My intestines had twisted. It was a nightmare getting out of the hospital. They finally kicked me out, sent me home with a script for Norco's. I think it was 15, something like that. It was nothing. But I've been hooked up to morphine this whole time. 2-3 days later, because of excruciating pain, not because I'm taking too many Norcos, because of excruciating pain, I'm out of these things. And I go to the doctor. The doctor was being investigated for something. I don't know, probably somebody searching for pills or whatever. And he thought that maybe I was. And so he wouldn't refill my prescription. Started my career purchasing Norcos on the streets, $10 a pop. I was in excruciating pain. I needed something to stop it. That went on for about a month, and then I was no longer in pain. And then I quit taking the Norcos. That's what you do. I'm not in pain anymore. And I started getting sick. And I thought it had something to do with my surgery. I didn't know what it was. I was feeling flush. I was feeling, if you know, opiate withdrawals. It was a motherfucker. I went and got more Norcos, and that stopped it. That went on for about 6 months. When the Norco thing ended, I was taking anywhere from 20 to 30 a day. I met this little girl buying Norcos, and she told me, Kevin, you know, as much money as you're spending on these things, you know, heroin would be a lot cheaper. And I was spending a lot of money on Norcos. So I decided I'll try it, I guess, but I'm not shooting it up, right? Like, I'm not doing that. That's not happening. So that started my heroin career. Heroin was indescribable to me. I needed it. I needed it real bad. My career was going well. I was making very, very good money when all that started. The heroin addiction drove me to one day I went home with my wife and the kids in the front lawn. And I had this little blonde girl who had a hookup on heroin. I didn't need them anymore. So I told my wife and my kids, bye. They weren't doing it for me. So I just walked away. Unfortunately, to this day, I haven't seen them because I walked away from my kids. She's pissed. I don't blame her. Girlfriend at the time had a very, very good job with the state. I had a very, very good job with a transmission shop, and I'm making very good money. But a heroin habit quickly turns into something that's insane, where I'm spending $200 to $400 a day just in heroin. I've got guys coming up to my place of business bringing me heroin. Life was getting pretty insane. No, I'm good. It got to the point to where I was in a disgusting little apartment with a crazy-ass pit bull. The girlfriend had left me, and I was just there. There was a mattress. That was it. That was what was there. And I had this kind of moment of desperation where I was like, you know what? When all else fails, let's call Mom. And so I called my mom, and I told her. I said, Mom, I need your help. I said, I'm addicted to heroin. I'm shooting up heroin. And she was like, what the fuck? What do you mean you're shooting up heroin? I said, and I told her, I said, Mom, I'm shooting up heroin. She's like, no fucking way. She goes, give me your address and I'll come there. She goes, don't clean up, just I'll be there in a minute. Yeah, Mom wanted to see what it was like. And Mom walked into that apartment and it broke her heart. She didn't know what to do. She started calling around. She called OSAR. It was going to be a few days before I could get into OSAR to go get some treatment. So Mom said, all right, well, we're going to go back to my house, and I'm going to take care of you, watch you for a couple days until we get you into treatment. I told her, I said, Mom, I'm going to be dope sick here in a little bit. And dope sick's really, really bad. So I hate to do this to you, but we need to go get some dope. And my mom's had a triple bypass surgery. She's got heart complications. She can't deal with me being psychotic because I need to shoot heroin. She can't deal with that. So Mom said, call your dope dealer. Let's go get some dope. Something that'll keep you pacified until I can get you to treatment. So we go over to the east side, call my dealer. By the way, my mom absolutely loved my dealer. She thought he was just the sweetest guy. And we're over on 12th and Chalmers in a two-door bright red Toyota Yaris. The car looks like an egg. And I'm as white as I am, and my mom's French-Canadian. We stick out. So we get what I need. And I sit in the car, and I'm jonesing. I am jonesing, but we're going to go home, and I'm going to be all right. And Mom's going to get me into treatment, thank God. And we're at the Y in Oak Hill, and we're headed west. And my mom goes, she could tell I was getting sick. And she goes, well, do your shit. Excuse me? She goes, get well, please. My mom proceeded to make me make a shot of heroin in this car, and it jaw-dropped her. She watched me make it, and I was shaking. I was like, no way. Like, I felt like I was betraying, I don't know. It was disgusting. And she said, do it. And I did it, and she just broke out in tears. It totally, totally broke my mom's heart. We get home. Dope's gone in a couple days, but thank God OSAR had me an appointment. I ran out of the dope in 2 days. My mom had a cat. that had a broken leg. So I'm shooting up cat tranquilizers. The cat's limping around the house. But I'm not sick. We still talk about that today. And of course, she tells my social worker with OSAR about me shooting these cat tranquilizers. And my mom's just in love with this lady. But it was apparent to her that I needed help. So they got me into detox center. Vicky detoxed me. I remember when I got out, my mom goes, "Thank God." It was only a week. It was just a detox. She goes, "Thank God." I was like, "I know, right?" She's like, "Ah, you're fixed." I was not fixed. Using immediately picked right back up. I have no tools, right? All I know how to do is shoot dope. That's it. And just the cycle again and again and again. Finally, I got into a recovery center in San Antonio, Lifetime Recovery. And it was great. I didn't go with the right intentions. I went because I had nowhere else to go. This is what I needed to do. So I went. I had an amazing counselor. Most counselors have 6, 7, 8 clients they got to tend to. Mine just had me. And he did a lot of work with me. A lot of the stuff that he taught me when I was in there 5 years ago still sticks with me. It's weird. I still remember him. Empathize, bro. You gotta empathize. I got out of treatment and I didn't do 3 very, very, very important things. I didn't change my people. I didn't change my places, and I didn't change my things. If nothing changes, guess what happens? Nothing fucking changes. A little bit changed. Heroin was no longer the thing all my friends were doing. Going down, checking your pulse all night, you know what I mean? Just right there, almost dead, but not. That wasn't what we were doing anymore. When I got out, we're shooting meth. Here we go. Oh, Jesus. I'm almost 3 years sober, and I still, in the back of my brain, my brain's going, there's probably about 7 cops here right now. I've done a lot of meth. As if somebody dared me, I couldn't. But the thing about my meth addiction was, and why it lasted so long, was there wasn't this huge burning pile of my life behind me. I'd already lost everything. I really had nothing. So I have a methamphetamine addiction, which looked all right compared to the heroin because there wasn't that burning city behind me. So I rode the meth for a long, long time. I had warrants. In my heroin addiction, I picked up a few charges. Now I'm on this meth addiction, and I'm not going to my probation because I'm sure that they're gonna know that I'm using, and they're gonna lock me up. But my probation officer in the small town of Johnson City was in my grandfather's old office of the old jail. They knew me. He was one of those good old boys that was like, "Kevin, if you get a drug problem, just let me know, and we'll get you some help," type thing. But just go to work. We need you to work. I never went back. I just kept shooting meth. That was way more fun. My meth addiction spiraled out of control mentally, spiritually. It wasn't a physical thing for me. It wasn't a wreckage thing. It was a psychotic thing. I was that friend that tried my best to make sure that you knew that I loved you. But at the same time, I'm clutching pistols, my hand's in a couch, I'm clutching a knife because I know one of you motherfuckers is going to do it any minute. You're going to do it. What? I don't know. But I'm going to be ready, right? I'm going to be ready. My friends loved me. They knew that I really didn't have anything. They knew that I didn't have anybody. My family has just completely been like, dude, you're too fucking crazy. We're not messing with you anymore. Stay out there. 2014 Thanksgiving, my meth addiction was pretty crazy. I'm walking my pit bull. I'm supposed to have Thanksgiving dinner at 2. For some reason, it's like 10 p.m. and I'm still walking this poor fucking dog. A task force set up by Travis County had decided that I was out there, I was too crazy, and I was going too hard, and it was time to stop me. I remember looking up, and the 183 was closed down, and that's when it happened. I'll be honest with you, I was very, very, very excited to go to prison. I was ready to sit down. When I was homeless, I tried to turn myself in to Travis County. They wouldn't take me. They were full. I had an active warrant. I was a fugitive. I was ready to go. I went to prison in 2014, and emotionally, it was very, very hard for me. Nobody wrote me. Nobody sent me money. I just fucking sat there. That's what happened. But I can adapt real quick and do what I need to do. So I sat down and I got my little routine and I did my time. I got out and those three things didn't change again. My people, places, and things did not change. Day two, I had a needle in my arm again. And it was just like that, right where I left off. Nothing changed. The psychosis, the demons, it's all there. The shadow people, it was like, they were like, dude, he's back. You know what I mean? He's out. All right. And I rode the needle again for about 5 months. I wasn't homeless. I had somewhere to stay. I had people around me that knew I was active in addiction, but they had their own shit going on. They couldn't really... I'm sure I was a burden, maybe. They didn't say I was. They put my ass to work. I like to work. Until I started becoming dangerous again. Who are these people doing? What are they... they're up to something. It's going to happen again. And I remember I had a big book, and I opened it up, and I was dabbling with, let's do this thing. The next morning, I remember I was working on the property, and I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to try this thing. I'm going to try this recovery thing. Let me see what, I'm not going to use anymore. And it was 2 minutes after I had that conversation with myself that the phone rang. And it was a friend of mine who said, hey, man, we're going to go see the devil. You want to go? And I said, yeah, all right. As soon as I hung up the phone, I was like, what the fuck? What am I doing? I went to my room. I grabbed my big book. Oh, God, please, no. Too late. I'm already going. That's happening. And that was my last use. I remember that night. It was super weird for a tweaker like me. All the dope I could want was all there. Didn't have to pay for any of it. But I felt super, super shameful. I mean, what the fuck am I doing? I was out at 2222 620 out in that area. And I saw a young lady post online that she was going to a meeting. And I thought, oh, fuck, yeah, hell yeah. This is what I want to do. And I remember I grabbed my backpack. And I said, I'm done. And I walked 23 miles to Cherry Creek.
Yeah.
I was done. That was all the plan that I had. There was a couch behind Cherry Creek, or behind the motorcycle place at Cherry Creek, one of there. Didn't have any cushions, but that was my home. And this young lady was talking to me about, hey, maybe you should try sober living. And I remember when I was in recovery, or when I was in treatment, guys get, oh, dude, bro, I'm getting into a sober house, man. This is going to be awesome. I'm like, what? Like, why do you want to go do that when you get out of here? That didn't make sense to me. Like, once you're out, bro, you're out. Go. You know what I mean? I was like, nah, I'm good, man. My mom's got me. My poor mother. Jesus. So I interviewed at an Oxford house, and I look like this, minus about 50 pounds. Yeah, I'm really sober. And these guys are sitting around, and they're like, and I'm telling, they're asking me all these questions, and I'm like, at this point, I'm like, there's no way they're going to let me in their house. There's no way. And so I'm just being brutally honest with them. You know what I mean? Like, this is done, whatever. The couch is there. I'm good. And they did something that nobody had done for quite a while. They took a chance on me. I got in that house. They're like, bro, we got to go to meetings. You got to get a job. You got to get this and that and the other. And I'm like, look, at that point, I was completely done. I threw in the white towel. I'm done. I don't know how to do this. The only thing I'm good at is getting in trouble, going to prison, hurting my mom. That's what I'm good at. And I started doing this deal that they're talking to you all about right now. I started doing this thing. And it's weird what happens when you don't put that drink or drug in your system. Some really, really amazing things start happening. I got in the house. I got a sponsor. Bless that bastard. I got a sponsor. I started working these steps. And I just completely, y'all show me what to do. I don't know. And I started doing everything they asked me to do. And I became a productive member of this house. After about 3 months, the opportunity came and they said, hey, man, you want to go open your own house? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. He's like, eh? I'm like, I guess let's do it. I mean, it's just a sober house. How hard could it be? I've opened 3 houses for them. And I spent 26 months with them, learning how to be a man, because that is not what I knew how to do.
Yeah.
Men aren't running around sticking needles in their arms, blowing off their children, blowing off their family, making commitments and not sticking to them. That's not what grown-ass men are doing. That's not what's going on. And I met this guy right here who, he tells me we just say yes, right? That's what we do. I imagine he tells everybody else that, hey, just so y'all know, Kevin is told to say yes. That's why I'm here tonight. But guys, since doing this deal, you know, I remember it snowing, I'm under 183, it's raining, and I'm screaming because I have nowhere to go. I have no shelter, I've got no blanket, I've got nothing. And I remember praying for this type of life. Not even this type of life. Like, I was praying for the shit that was going on when I was 2 months sober. Like, this right here is beyond anything I can imagine. This is insanity. The promises that come true by just not picking up a drink, not picking up that drug, are insane. Today, I'm a man of my word. When the phone rings, if I pick it up, I say yes, and then I show up. That's what we do. I found the loophole. You don't, you know, you have to say yes, but that's if you pick up. Quality time for yourself is very, very important. Very, very important. Today I have sponsors. I have sponsees. My sponsees are sponsors. I live a life beyond my wildest dreams. Now, shit does come up in recovery. Shit is going to happen. Life continues. These little bitty things that used to pop up in my life used to be catastrophes. You know, damn, fuck this, I'm going to go get high. Today it's not like that. It's weird. having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. I totally have had a spiritual awakening. It's not the white light stuff. That's not the way it was for me. Me standing up here right now on Father's Day, talking to a group of alcoholics and addicts, is one hell of a spiritual experience. Just coming up here. This is insane. No matter what, I don't pick up. I don't mean the phone, I mean the drug. No matter what, I do not pick up. When shit hits the fan, something to learn from it. There's something to learn. That we don't have these catastrophes. Shit happens, but you call your sponsor. You see, I have a new way of living today that had I never been an alcoholic or addict, I never would have had. When people say, oh yeah, I'm a grateful alcoholic or I'm a grateful addict, when I first came in these rooms, I was like, what are you talking about? You just rode 3 hours on the bus to get here. What the fuck are you grateful for? Dude, to be able to ride the bus. To be able to ride the bus is a miracle. Today I get to be present. Today I get to have these things happen to me. I get to show up. I get to work with alcoholics and addicts. I get to be there. I still haven't seen the kids. Those things still haven't come back for me. But I know that they will one day. I know that they will. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, yes. But as long as I keep putting my foot forward and I keep doing this thing, I know that God's got me. He's proved himself already over and over and over and over. I have a connection with my higher power today that I never thought was possible. When I first came in these rooms, I didn't have a higher power. The word God scared the shit out of me. My mom was a Jehovah's Witness for a while. She was Christian for a while. She was a Scientologist for a while. We went everywhere. I was very confused. Today I have a God that I don't understand, and that's okay. You don't have to understand it. Most people can't. The crazies will tell you they can. But I have a power that I don't. I have a power that I don't understand. And it works for me. When I first got sober, my sponsor told me, because I had a problem with the God word, he said, dude, just get up in the morning, every morning, and say, hey, bro, talk to your higher power however you want. Say, hey, bro, keep me sober today. And at the end of the day, if you stay sober, hey, bro, thanks for keeping me sober. You see, I can't stay sober for the rest of my life. I can't do that. I can't stay sober for another month. I can't stay sober for another week. I can't fucking do that. It's not going to work. But I can stay sober one day. Just one day. That's all you got to do. You've accidentally done that a million times. Because you couldn't get a hold of the dope man. You were out of money. You've accidentally stayed sober 24 hours. It is not hard. You literally just have to do it every day. You can do one day. Wake up, keep me sober. If you go to bed sober, thank you, Lord, for keeping me sober. And then you got to do it the next day. But until you wake up, that day hasn't came. So just one day, just do it like that. That's how it's worked for me. My sober date's 8/28/2015.
Yeah!
For that, I'm truly grateful. That's all I got, guys.